Floodgate Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Readings from the Tribune with Bridget show. But I am not Bridget. Bridget should be in here very shortly. So please do stay tuned. I think there might have been some issue with a new conference call address. And I'll be addressing that whole issue tomorrow night on the wildcard slot. I think we will have Bridget in here in just 1 second. I see her logging into the conference, and so she'll be connecting, and we'll hear from her in no time flat. A lot has been going on, but hopefully I won't have the time to deal with any of that. Do check out RenegadeTribune.com, and of course all the great hosts here on the network at RenegadeBroadcasting.com. Hope you've been enjoying some of the wild cards. We do have a lot more planned in terms of repeat hosts. Patrick will be back again for the show next Tuesday. I would like to get him a better mic. I might just send
this
one down to him.
This call is being recorded.
And we'll be having John Smith doing some shows starting at the end of this month. So very exciting. Bridget, it seems like you're here, so welcome, and please take it away.
Thanks, everybody. Doing readings from the Renegade Tribune, Wednesday, February 15. I wanted to start off by, as Kyle did in his last show, remembering Dresden, Germany. In 1945, 62 years ago, it would have been 3 a.m. Thursday, February 16. Right now. So, in memory of that onslaught, I want to start with. Sorry, my computer went off. I had pulled up the song. But wouldn't you know? It took it from me, so I think I might not play it, especially since Kyle already did, but it was going to be, and I might fit it in after the break, Bombing Über Dresden, which was posted on 213, and has, I was going to read the words and play the music. But moving onward, talking about what we learned since last week from Sinead, multi-talented, very, very skilled, really, Renegade sweetheart. She's added Renegade videos. That'll give us another avenue to support. In addition to the broadcasting, the Tribune, the films, she stated that she is thrilled to be able to do this because YouTube discriminated so much against her and us, constant bamming. And by the way, for a belated Valentine's Day for this, our sweetheart, she sure could use a donation. And I found out she wears a size 4 or a 6, depending if you wanted to send her something. She says sundresses from the thrift store, fine. I think she'd like to pick out her own jeans. But I wanted to read, keeping that in mind, from the Tribune, the article, Anti-Semitism, keeping in mind how she's been treated, how we're treated. It's in the 1911 Encyclopedia Britannica, posted on April 26th by Lasha Dark Moon, and the article is by Carlos Whitlock Porter, starting with that. There is a saying in French, the more things change, the more they are the same. The Jew is eternal, from the Encyclopedia Britannica, 1928 edition. A truism of liberalism is that the truth may be approximated through a comparison of opinion. In the Encyclopedia Britannica, for example, all articles dealing directly with Jewish matters are written today by Jews and rabbis, dripping with self-pity and self-praise. Articles on peripheral subjects, however, tell a different story. LD, standing for Lashe Darkman, she says, here are excerpts from the 1911 Encyclopedia Britannica, which give historical information about Jews, which is not to be found in modern encyclopedias. The bits in bold font have been emphasized because these are the bits, apart from one or two exceptions, which would nowadays be regarded as anti-Semitic and hence censored and suppressed by modern encyclopedias like Wikipedia. Starting, Russia. The Semitic race is represented by upwards of 5 million Jews. The rapidity with which they peopled certain towns, for example, Odessa, and whole provinces was really prodigious. The law of Russia prohibits them from entering Great Russia, only the wealthiest and best educated enjoying this privilege. Nevertheless, they are met with everywhere, even in the Urals. Their chief abodes, however, continue to be Poland. Organized as they are into a kind of community for mutual protection and mutual help, they soon become masters of the trade wherever they penetrate. In the village, they're mostly innkeepers, intermediaries in trade, and pawnbrokers. The numerous outbreaks against the Jews are directed not against their creed, but against them as keen businessmen and extortionate moneylenders. LD. Such a sentence would be taboo in any modern encyclopedia. Jewish writers today do their best to present an entirely false picture of the Jewish moneylender of the Middle Ages, striving to give the impression that moneylending, trade, and commercial activity formed a very small and insignificant part of Jewish life. The idea of the Jew in the popular mind as a commercial predator must be presented, in other words, as a vicious anti-Semitic stereotype. Andrew Joyce, in his three-part book review of the Jewish writer Andrew Gillies's Trials of the Diaspora, has this to say: Julius paints a portrait of a community like any other. He urges us to avoid the misconception that the typical Jewish milieu is a commercial one, and that Judaism itself is especially hospitable to money-making. Joyce goes on to show that this is a total lie, and that money lending at usurious rates of interest was the main occupation of most Jews during the Middle Ages. These exorbitant rates of interest, 43% was normal, invariably led to the loss of Gentile land and property that ended up in Jewish hands, making the Jews obscenely rich at the expense of the Gentile poor. It was precisely for this reason that the Jews were so universally detested and kicked out of so many countries, beginning with their expulsion from England in 1290. They were absent from England for a period of 366 years until they were let in again by the uppity Oliver Cromwell. During this long Judenfrei period, the country prospered prodigiously and was known as Merry England. The end of that quote. The wealth of Russia, consisting mainly of raw produce, the trade of the country turns chiefly on the purchase of this for export. This traffic is in the hands of a great number of middlemen in the West, Jews, and elsewhere, Russia, to whom the peasants are for the most part in debt. In the rest of the country, they had not been allowed to reside in the villages because their habits of keeping vodka shops and lending money at usurious interest were found to demoralize the peasantry. That is the quote from the encyclopedia. LD says, alcohol addiction was promoted by the Jews in Tsarist Russia. The Jews owned most of the pubs and sold rotgut vodka, resembling methylated spirits, that destroyed the livers and kidneys of the peasants. Much of this information, with lurid details, will be found in Solzhenitsyn's 200 Years Together. Another good reason for banning the book. Getting back to the encyclopedia. Romania, their improvidence soon got them into the hands of Jewish money lenders, who, fortunately for the peasants, were by law unable to become proprietors of the soil. Another quote from the 1911 encyclopedia. The bitter feeling against them in Romania is not so much due to religious fanaticism as to the fear that if given political and other rights, they will gradually possess themselves of the whole soil. In many places, they have a monopoly of the wine and spirit shops and retail trade generally. And as they are always willing to advance money on usury and are more intelligent and better educated than the ordinary peasant, there is little doubt that in a country where the large landowners are proverbially extravagant and the peasant proprietors needy, the soil would soon fall into the hand of the Jews, were it not for the stringent laws which prevent them from owning land outside the towns. When, in addition, it is considered that the Montanian Jews, who are mostly of Polish and Russian origin, speak a foreign language, wear a distinguishing dress, and keep themselves aloof from their neighbors, the antipathy in which they are held by the Romanians generally may be understood. Next, Hungary. The Jews monopolize a large portion of trade, are with the Germans the chief employers of labor, and control not only the finances, but to a great extent, the government and press of the country. Oops, you can't say that nowadays, LD. Owing to the improvidence of the Hungarian landowners and the poverty of the peasants, the soil of the country is gradually passing into their hands. Next, Germany. Nearly all the bankers and stockbrokers in Germany were Jews. Many of the leaders of the liberal parties, for example, Bamberger and Lasker, were of Jewish origin. The doctors of liberalism were supported by papers owned and edited by Jews, hence the wish to restore more fully the avowed Christian character of the state, coinciding with the attack on the influence of finance, which owed so much to the liberal economic doctrines, easily degenerated into attacks on the Jews. From the 1922 Encyclopedia Britannica, Poland, the Jewish question, one of the most important questions to be considered by the new Polish state is that of the Jews. Numerically, they form roughly one-seventh of the population. In Warsaw, a third of the population are Jews. In many provincial towns, four out of every five inhabitants are Jews. And in some nine out of ten, and of these the vast majority are Eastern Jews, who in language, religion, and customs differ from the population, their language is Yiddish, a Middle High German dialect for the purposes of writing. Hebrew characters are used. Their dress is peculiar to themselves, and their unclean habits and low standards of conduct are neither European nor modern. The Western Jew is the more civilized type, which is generally found in Western Europe, speaking the language and conforming to the habits of Western civilization. Eastern Jew is essentially a business or commercial man, but rarely a producer. He is usually a middleman or intermediary. In towns, the majority of the shops are owned by Jews, but they are a race apart, hated and despised by the rest of the population, devoted to their religion, which is a primitive type of Judaism. The Jews have been settled in Poland between 800 and 1,000 years, so that they can hardly be considered strangers in the land. In fact, Slavs cannot be considered very much more native than they. It was not, however, until about 20 years ago that the present quarrel between the Jews and the Poles began. The Tsarist government drove the Jews out of Russia, but gave them exceptional advantages in Poland. These Litvaks, as they were called, openly professed themselves the partisans of Russia and founded the Jewish press, which set to work openly to fight against Polish autonomy. The Poles attacked the Jews before the war by means of a national boycott, the only means by which one subject race could attack another. During and after the war, the hostility to the Jews was increased by the fact that in the German occupation, the Jew was a willing tool of the invader, and by the close connection between the Jews and Bolshevism. The hostility to the Jews was marked in 1918 and 1919 by excesses in which some 200 to 300 have in fact been killed, but which have been enormously exaggerated by the Jewish press. Captain Peter Wright, in his very valuable and interesting report, states that the great majority of the poor Jews are of the Eastern type and extreme orthodoxy. They form an immense mass of squalid and helpless poverty. And Captain Wright's only recommendation is that the richer Jews should study the condition of the poor Jews, who either trade as small middlemen, as hawkers or touts. They are driven to all sorts of illicit and fraudulent practices, as in England, in the East End of London. Too large a proportion of convictions for such offenses can be laid to their account. They are unfit for the modern economic world for want of education and for Western society because of their habits and want of cleanliness. They are devoted to their strange old religion, but as they grow richer, their piety, as the chief rabbi told Captain Wright, is destroyed by wealth, and they take too little interest in their poorer brethren. No one who knows Poland can be surprised at the Polish attitude or the desire of the Poles to be rid of this corrupting influence. Next, Hungary. The Jewish question has become important in Hungary. As they grew rich through trade, the ghetto became too small for them. As they owned no land, they were not tied to the soil and streamed into the cities, where they found more opportunities of making money and adding to their wealth. Above all, Budapest, as the center of commerce and industry and the seat of the banks, had a strong attraction for them. Three distinct classes of the Jews grew up: the Orthodox, who wished to remain Jews with all the habits and customs of the ghetto; those who, in most respects, relinquished their position of religious isolation and strove after assimilation; and thirdly, the cosmopolitan Jews, the revolutionaries, who were the enemies of all national feeling and represented materialistic internationalism. It was the part played by this third class of Jews which has made the Jewish question acute in Hungary. As Hungary has no true middle class, they exercise great influence on the intellectual life of the country. Instead of the national heroes, Marx, Engels, and Lenin were glorified. In boys' and girls' schools, the pupils received enlightened instruction in the processes of generation, birth, etc., with disastrous results to the juvenile morality. The leaders of the Social Democrats and bourgeois radicals were almost without exception of Jewish origin. This was also the case with the most prominent members of government of the Republic. These were the men who had made it impossible to resist the invasion of Hungary by force of arms. Since most of the ruling politicians and people's commissars belonged to the younger generation of Jews, anti-communist feeling in the country assumed more and more the character of anti-Semitism. One consequence of the Bolshevist rule was the still more intense development of anti-Semitic feeling. Since the leaders of the communists were chiefly recruited among the younger Jewish intellectual circles, the National Assembly, in order to prevent the creation of a Jewish intellectual proletariat, in September 1920, proclaimed numerous clauses for the universities. Under this clause, Jews could only be admitted to the universities in proportion to their percentage of the population. Next, from the 1928 Encyclopedia Britannica, Jews, quote, "The Jewish population of the world on the outbreak of the war in 1914 may be estimated at about 14,900,000. The Jews wholeheartedly supported the revolution. Among the Bolshevik leaders and their satellites were a certain number of Jews. At the same time, the American Jews began to play a part of growing importance in the Zionist movement and were concerned in the negotiations leading up to the Balfour Declaration, of which President Wilson was a consistent and influential advocate. In both Russia and Hungary, a prominent part in the Bolshevik movement was played by men who, though long disassociated from the Jewish community, were nevertheless of Jewish birth. Next, Hungary. The people's commissars and practically all the leading persons were Jews, a fact which explains the anti-Jewish feeling which later prevailed in Hungary. Zionism. Not long after the outbreak of the war, Dr. Weizmann and his friends were brought in touch with a number of influential public men. What the Zionists proposed was, in effect, that Great Britain should make it part of the policy to provide in the peace settlement for the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jews. By the beginning of 1916, the British government had come to the conclusion that there were other and more practical reasons for taking Zionism seriously. The hour of decision was approaching in the United States, where there was a Jewish population of over 3 million. A declaration in favor of Zionism would help to rally Jewish opinion throughout the world to the side of the Allies. President Wilson had personally intervened to make it clear that he would welcome a British pronouncement in favor of Zionism. In 1922, resolutions associating the United States with the policy embodied in the Declaration were unanimously adopted by both houses of Congress. At the insistence of Great Britain, a Zionist delegation was given a hearing by the Peace Conference in Paris on February 27, 1919. Quote, "The Arabs did not take kindly to the Balfour Declaration, which they did not altogether unnaturally misconstrue. There were anti-Jewish demonstrations in Jerusalem in 1920. Next, Bavaria. Meanwhile, the Nationalist Leagues had gained in strength and now began to defy the government's orders. The most important of them were the National Socialists, an extreme militaristic, nationalist, and above all, anti-Semite body, nominally democratic in tendency, but actually largely used by the rich to break strikes and attack socialism. This body was raised from obscurity by one Hitler, a good demagogue, but no politician. Hitler and other leaders were sent to prison or lunatic asylums. There is a saying in French, the more things change, the more they are the same. The Jew is eternal. Carlos W. Porter, 1994. Note, the 1911 Encyclopedia Britannica is available on CD-ROM with the 1922 and 1926 supplements can also be found there in case you want to see what it said back then. Thank you. I'm next going to read from the Tribune, keeping in mind that Sine told us that one of her first videos that she put on our new Renegade Vids is about the plan of so many people of Hispanic origins coming from Mexico and South and Central America to actually take over America. And there's been a lot of problems to us. I find that here in my neighborhood. I can tell you about that sometime. So I thought I'd start with the article. A Jewish doctor says, read the exact title, thank you. Rape White Women and Create Half-Breeds. This is dated December 16, 2015. It's by Lasha Darkmoon, translated by Steve Good, with brief notes by Lasha. Disclaimer, we have no idea if this article is genuine or not. Let the reader decide. We received it in an email from John Kaminsky, who in turn got it from his correspondent, Raymond Goodwin. Goodwin heads his widely circulated email, quote, "Psychotic Plan for White Genocide. Rape right-wing women and breed mixed kids," says French doctor. The advice to rape white women apparently comes from a French Jew named Thierry Lecoquier, a medical doctor from L'Allier in Upper Normandy. It was apparently published in a Jewish-run publication called Nouveau L'Obs. I apologize in advance if this article turns out to be a fake. My trusted correspondent, Felix Dean, a veteran poster on the Dark Moon site under another name, advises me to post it without hesitation. So I accept his challenge. Lasha Dark Moon. From Raymond Goodwin's introduction, quote, a Jewish-run publication in France publishes a doctor's article calling for the rape and forcible impregnation of white nationalist French girls. This is war, white men and women. You must awaken, because the perpetrators of European genocide will use the vilest means. Soviet propagandist Ilya Ehrenberg called for the same thing, inflaming the brutes of the Red Army to rape and kill German girls. And they did exactly that. 2 million women and little girls were raped, many to death at the hands of these foul creatures, the evil of whom cannot be spoken in human tongue. This same vile, pornographic sadism lives on in the wicked man below, whose very eyes betray the evil that lies within. God help us. Retroit des conscience. Patrie, patrie, pour les femmes de France, pour les femmes de Europe. You can see the picture. Rape right-wing females to create multicolored descendants, says French doctor by Steve Good. In the blog section of French media outlet, News, a doctor wrote that any woman who votes for Front National, French anti-mass immigration party, has a reptilian brain and should be raped and impregnated to produce multicolored descendants. Thierry Lecoquier, a medical doctor from L'Allier in Upper Normandy, has been reported to the Council of Doctors for his article, which has now been deleted from the website. His article, titled Impregnate the Female of the National Front, says this, quote, right-wing women do not appear less mammal than other women, even if they have a bigger than average reptilian brain. As any woman, it is subject to hormonal moods. With the feature that ethnology confirms to us, she gets especially wet for rough men. These female FN sympathizers certainly offer us a means to beat them. As each right-wing female appreciates the military and the macho and low feminist ideas, let's play her game. Let's take her at her own game. Let's take her and F her. Since they give us the recipes for crossbreeding their pale race, use it against her side. Let's sexually overcome these stupid right-wing females for the survival of a smiling humanity, because they are stupid and easily tricked. Like game going to the hunter, things should be easier. Let's create a curly descent, not German, mind you. Let's curlify this other-hating, frightened France. Refusing the advances of family planning, every pregnancy will result in a little half-breed or a mongrel, an artist that tomorrow she will eventually like. Blacks, Negroes, gooks, Jews, leftists, gypsies, disabled, freebases, and even my gay friends in solidarity, bring up your hard D-I-C-K-S. Let our consciousness leap under the pillow and jump on the right wing pussies offered. Unfortunately, sometimes pretty, hail to a vast altruistic population. Provide multicolored descendants to the sinking country of France. With one goal, kill right wing poison in the egg, end quote. As of yet, there has been no reaction from French authorities to this stockily anti-white article. While most anti-whites prefer to take a more subtle approach using code words like diversity, Le Coquier is very blatant in saying what he wants, white genocide in France, the call to rape white women. Blacks, Negroes, Gooks, Jews, bring up your heart, kill this right-wing poison in the egg, LD says. The same article in the original French can be read here, and you can read the article there if you want. I have checked to see if the obscenities in the English version correspond to the French slang in the original. They do. Thus, the English phrase, bring up your heart, seems a fair enough translation of the French, out of their shoes, up with your dicks. The word Q-U-E-U-E in French has many different meanings, meaning tail and penis. In case you think no Jew would recklessly call for the mass rape of white women, think again. Stalin's propaganda minister, the Jew Ilya Ehrenberg, openly called for the mass rape of German women in World War II. This led to the rape and torture of 2 million German women under the most horrendous circumstances. Here is another prominent Jew calling for the mass rape, mutilation, and burning alive of white women and children. So I'm pulling it up, and the person that's saying this is Ishmael Levitz. It is in the Jewish interest, it is in humanity's interest, that whites experience a genocide. Until white children are burned alive, white women raped, mutilated, murdered, and all white men who have not been slaughtered watch powerlessly as their people are terrorized. Only then will mankind be on a more equal footing, ready to discuss white privilege and the apparent chip on the shoulder that minorities have. So thank you. The next one I had in mind to go along with this attack on us is The Gift by Axe of Perun, June 5, 2016. What fascinates me is the amount of ignorance that our people have accepted as a standard, something that is just normal, and how things are supposed to be. This ignorance is evident in many aspects of our life and within our societies. This aspect has always existed and is growing within the Jewish-induced ideologies and revolutions. Their main goal always has been and will be the same: the entire destruction of a current norm or way of life. From an extrapolated perspective, the very destruction of nature itself. Let us remind ourselves that pretty much everything within this realm can be packed down to basic disks of information. Different decoded values of genetics and DNA. With such a different amount of information, different material forms come into being. Some of them, or of the organic life forms with which we also identify. Within this realm of humanoid life forms, there are different races, which, each on its own, represent a different composite of information. What we see as racial difference between an Aboriginal and European can be also explained as one consisting of a larger pack of data than the other, therefore also having more data to work with and conclusively being able to decide more of life and bring about more invention, reason, thought, creation, and so on. We could say that the white European is a better tool when it comes to working around life on this planet. It is a USB stick with more valuable data on it. The Jews, therefore, wish to destroy our genetic code, our data, our pack of information, our tool, because they know that we are capable of entirely deconstructing the lies which their own data represents. But they bamboozle us through various ideologues and are constantly attempting to either destroy or deconstruct our data. And where impossible, they wish to mix it with other data. Now, what happens if you have a larger file with much more data and try to copy paste a smaller file with the same name into the same folder? It will offer you three options: to move and replace the existing file, erasing the original data, to not move the file, keeping the original data, and to move but keep both files. Obviously, the only valid option is to not move the file. In the first one, you lose yourself entirely, while in the other one, you are now stuck with a different opinion, to say the least. Add to this democracy, and you've got yourself a problem under which we currently suffer within all white nations. This data example of our existence is a very shocking one. Only through racial purity is our data entirely kept and transferred and developed. The moment race mixing occurs, we lose our data, sometimes even entirely. This leads to the conclusion that at a certain point of existence, our file, called the white race, came into being. And as it developed itself, encoded and transferred among its racial brethren, it grew and spread. What we see occur in the 21st century is an attempt to entirely destroy this file, and it is being done through countless and various ways. The Jew, as the virus behind the corruption and destruction of our file, is attempting to penetrate our file walls, immunity systems, on a daily basis. Little by little, he is decoding our protective systems and immediately encoding his own data mining processes and loopholes for other smaller types of viruses, so-called bacteria, Trojan horses, and worms, for example. Once a computer system is entirely corrupted by viruses of various levels, it can't operate. You are denied access to it. Now, what is the equivalent of such a thing in our organic form? The denial of freedom, speech, laws, movement, money, politics, media, everything. These organic viruses are like those annoying pop-ups which happen on your PC. They are the equivalent of all the propaganda you have to suffer through in real life. Once you get a hold of this concept of life, you will realize that the Jews and their allies are attempting to entirely erase the file called the white race. You could look at this planet as a hard disk drive having a partition for each of the humanoid races that exist upon it. What the Jews are attempting to do is format our partition and afterwards delete it. They have been doing this through the ages. At first, changing our very own data cores and understanding of existence. It all began with their very first infestation upon our race, the corrupted file data called the Bible. It created a hole within our defensive system that persists to this very day. This viral infection has fought its way through every aspect of our file organism and has become the overseer of all our actions and thoughts. As long as it exists, it will keep our immune system unaware to danger of a certain degree and will keep the danger of incoming Trojan horses always a possibility. It was important for the virus to destroy all such data nodes and cores of the white race, confuse it of its own basic roles and functions, replace it with viral ones and erase the original ones, mix it with new ones wherever necessary, and then silence the original ones. Where impossible to trick, war has been waged upon our entire file and much of the oldest and finest information that kept the integrity of our race together was sent into the recycle bin, never to return. Now, the final maneuver of the virus is to simply override all our data by race mixing. It is like a game of Othello or reversing. Let us go a little bit deeper here with this information. White males have the highest sperm count and volume. Another point that would make it easier to understand that more data is being transferred. It's difficult to find information on it, but there is no doubt in my mind that the sperm of different races transfers different amount of DNA. All you will find is some average number of megabytes, even though the general knowledge behind the creation of a child is based on the random exchange of data between the female and male data, resulting in various kinds of X and Y strings, which finally lead to either a boy or a girl as well. We have to understand one important aspect here, which is usually totally ignored or never mentioned. When you mix, for example, a donkey and a horse, you get a mule. There are cases in which the mule can breed afterwards again, but it will only ever produce a mule. The same scenario exists within dogs. Once mixed, they will never create the former pure breed ever again. What happens in such a process? There is a very simple explanation for this, and this is exactly why the Jews are also attempting to race mix us out of existence. Also, it was important to first understand that we transfer different amounts of information as we represent different data, which, on the biological organic level, expresses itself in forms of different races with different characteristics and capabilities. This must be clear. We are not all one race. We might have somewhere deep down, at the most basic level, the same foundation, but we have developed our own data code beyond others. Let us now look at this most simple graphic as he gives us one. Continuing on. Remember the mule example from a moment ago? This is exactly what happens on the humanoid level. The race mixed person will never again be able to create a pure white person, as the form of the mother will change as well. what once was 100% form would afterwards become, for example, a 75% European form, which on its own is simply a new complete form. To make it more clear, if the 100% European form is called A, then the 75% European form is now B, which is 75% of A. You can attempt to overload these 75% to make them more white, but they will never truly resemble the original anymore. They will never reach 100% again. The original data is lost. The mule will never give birth to a horse. Another shocking point is that already within two generations, you receive only 25% of DNA from your ancestors, which would be your grandparents. If the purity of the race is not preserved, a white form and the white race with it were to entirely cease to exist within less than 100 years. And this is what the Jew wishes to accomplish. To further help yourself, imagine this story through the combination of a motherboard and hardware that you attempt to install into it. This also explains why the Jews measure a Jew through their mother. She carries the form of a Jew, whereas the male carries the additional information regarding that Jew. Another important point is that the Jews and the Shabbos Goy are spreading propaganda that the white race in a general is a recessive genetic form, meaning that non-white DNA is supposedly dominant in the process of mixing and will take over features. In other words, race mixing between a Negro and a white results in basically a Negro. Now, with what we have learned, we can easily conclude that it isn't the black DNA that is dominant, but that it is unable to decode and adapt to the white DNA. Negroes and Semites overran and took control over Egypt. Does that mean that Negroes and Semites were dominant? Superior? No. Egypt, under their rule, ceased to exist within several generations, as they had no idea what to do with the nation they infested. In that very same fashion, the mixed race body which they inhabit when mixing with a white person will cease to exist within several generations, as their genetic code has no idea what to do with it. In the case of the black race, there is also a metaphysical important aspect to add here. The color black represents absorption, quote, take in or soak up energy or a liquid or other substance by chemical or physical action, typically gradually. Take in and assimilate information, ideas, or experience. Use or take up time or resources, the process or action by which one thing absorbs or is absorbed by another, to drink greedily. And this is exactly what happens. They attempt to absorb the white person entirely during the race mixing process, but can't do so, as we have already explained. It should also make you understand why formerly white areas become Stone Age Africa once we are gone. They absorb everything until it is consumed. And once everything is Black African, they got nothing to absorb from each other and therefore return to the Stone Age. But since they have no idea how our society came into being in the first place, they do not know what to do with it once we are gone. In other words, they will absorb current plug-and-play knowledge. They'll know how to use a mobile phone, but never be able to build one ever once again its battery is dead. This is simply the metaphysical reality we have to face. As long as they do not personally, as a race, develop, they will represent this black color in a metaphysical aspect in its purest form and will also return to it. This is why the Jews are massively engaging them to further our destruction. A simple example of light being engulfed by darkness and skin color dropping through race mixing. And he shows that example. Let us remind ourselves of what the Jew, Rabbi Rabinovich, said on January 12, 1952, quote, "The goal for which we have striven so considerably for 3,000 years is at last within our reach. And because its fulfillment is so apparent, it behooves us to increase our efforts and our caution tenfold. I can safely promise you that before 10 years have passed, our race will take its rightful place in the world, with every Jew a king and every Gentile a slave. This we hope to do with the issue of anti-Semitism, which works so well in uniting the Americans against Germany. We will openly reveal our identity with the races of Asia and Africa. I can state with assurance that the last generation of white children is now being born. Forbid the whites to mate with whites. The white woman must cohabitate with members of the dark races, the white men with black women. Thus, the white race will disappear. For the mixing of the dark with the white means the end of the white man, and our most dangerous enemy will become only a memory."
Tag um Tag, Jahr um Jahr, wenn ich durch diese Straßen gehe, seh ich, wie die Ruinen dieser Stadt wieder zu Häusern auferstehen. Doch bleiben viele Fenster leer, für viele gab es keine Wiederkehr. Und über das, was grad noch war, spricht man heute lieber gar nicht mehr.
I've always believed that Britain is a country of migrants. I'm Jewish. Some of my family came in the late 19th century. I'm Sephardi on my mother's side.
The Liberal Democrats will always stand up for a Britain that is open, tolerant and diverse. And in that spirit, I very much welcome the Jewish European Election Manifesto, calling for a strengthening of EU hate crime legislation. As a party, we wholeheartedly value the relationship we have with the Jewish community, both in Britain and internationally.
You're listening to Renegade Broadcasting.
And that's continuing on with what the good rabbi said he wants to do to us. Thus the white race will disappear. For the mixing of the dark with the white means the end of the white man, and our most dangerous enemy will become only a memory. We shall embark upon an era of 10,000 years of peace and plenty, the Pax Judaica, and our race will rule undisputed over the world. Our superior intelligence will easily enable us to retain mastery over a world of dark peoples. End of quote. Reading from Lazio. They fully understand, from Gift by Axe Perone. Thank you. They fully understand what we have just analyzed. They also understand another important subject which we are going to embark into now, the aspect of hermetics and how they apply to our organic life form. We discussed such elements throughout my article so far, but this time we'll do it from a slightly different perspective, just and only to offer a more detailed explanation. The Jewish God is androgynous. He is both male and female because they apply him from Hermetic knowledge, where it is supposed that if there exists a definite single source of everything, that it must have both aspects within itself. It must be both male and female and androgynous at the same time. This also means, when you read the Bible, that human was primarily created in God's image, androgynous. The Jewish religion is simply a cover for the Jewish race, created to blind the rest of the people who believe in the Bible. You have got to realize this. They are even pretending to believe in their own religion, just and only to make you think that it holds any truth. Meanwhile, they have a complete different approach to their mythology. You know how devious and cunning they are. There should be no problem behind you understanding this fact. They pretend to be religious. If they were to show up tomorrow and announce that they realize their own religion is fake and shit, would you still remain a Christian? Would Islam still exist? Think, you fools! Nevertheless, the human organic life form has these male and female aspects within him as well. But he himself isn't androgynous, or as they attempt to brainwash us, transgender. We, as an organic life form, are split between men and women. Only in the unity between these two does the idea of God manifest, resulting in a creation, the child. If, however, we are talking about our individual brains and their functions, then, yes, we have both a masculine and feminine aspect, ultimately overruled by our gender. It isn't as complicated as it sounds. You can observe pretty much all the laws of nature and their relationship between feminine and masculine elements and find them within yourself. But at the end of the story, your natural organic expression of what you are, and therefore, even though you can relate to mental processes of both elements, at the organic level, you can't deny nor escape your natural gender. This is, however, where the Jew is attempting to destroy us entirely by making people believe that their organic body itself is transgender, even though they see it isn't with their own two eyes. This is basically the foundation of many things within our reality. This is also why the sun is represented with a cross. It is basically a positive masculine polarity which makes female aspects gravitate towards it. By the very same analogy does our solar system function. The planets, moons, are going around the sun because the sun is making them gravitate towards it. In certain mythologies, the sun was shown as androgynous due to neutrons having both aspects. This is why the sun is the father, while the earth as a planet is the mother. In some cases, however, the father is the heavens, while the sun is the sun, S-O-N-S-U-N. We can also see that in such a relationship, there exists a boundary, a nation. So, Jews wish to destroy this very basic foundation of life, no borders whatsoever, and they do it by disrupting the female aspect and making them bond with each other, such elements entirely, resulting in the deconstructing of each individual element. Love, which would exist by creating a relationship between different female aspects of different such atoms, would mean that each atom doesn't cease to exist. True love doesn't destroy. If you love your son or daughter, you aren't going to consume him. Neither will you consume your wife or husband. But the Jews use love to consume everything. And in addition to that, are attempting to explain to both the male and female aspects that they both can be whatever the fuck they want to be. But hold on to that picture for now and let us analyze it further. As said, this is one of the foundations of existence, but it doesn't mean that it's applicable only in one single sense. Assume a hot, beautiful white woman enters a room. She would immediately represent the plus polarity and make dozens of men gravitate towards her as the minus polarity. Vice versa, the same is true. This is impossible in the cases of transgender, brainwashed zombies. However, they attempt to break their organic nature through various medical surgeries. See, on one level, they admit that they cannot hide their nature, but they ignore it because they are indoctrinated idiots. What we understood from this example is that both the man and woman can experience this example of the atom. But we also know that when they assume this role, they act a little bit different, don't they? When the man controls the negative, female aspect, chaos and creativity, he rarely knows how to approach the woman. Women, on the other hand, are quite the opposite. They touch you, imitate you, etc., because they feel at home, assuming this aspect. What happens when we take this example and attempt to analyze it through a home or a nation? If the man stays at home while the woman goes around, she will act entirely chaotic and will be easily influenced by the environment, which could eventually lead to open borders. If the woman stays at home while the man goes around, he will put the chaos under control through will and prevent outer influence from crossing the borders. We see, therefore, that it is very important which organic form assumes which element in certain situations. Take another example. Imagine the baby was the plus of the atom, while the mother was protecting it as the minus. Have you ever seen a mother protecting her child viciously? Well, that's what you'll get when the female entirely assumes the female aspect. However, in the case of a nation, a more stable border is required, a static and secure formation, which is only possible if the man takes over that aspect in such a case. We could go on forever attempting to analyze such things, and we have done several things before already, but it is important to understand that willpower is the main source of power which controls the relationship between female and male aspects. This willpower is naturally stronger in men, and therefore the men have since ever assumed the position of protector whenever it is necessary to put chaos under control. I say necessary because in the European lifestyle, we do not enslave women, we protect them. The Jew, however, has disrupted this entire relationship, this unity, and therefore is on a good way to destroying our entire race. The Jews, worshiping their androgynous god, hate the humanoid female because, due to her, according to them, the first humanoid was split into genders and therefore weakened. This is why they even have prayers where they thank God that they were born as men. The other Abrahamic faiths are not that different. Islam might even be worse in that regard, since the female aspect is associated with creativity, and the Jews hate it. We can understand why they wish to annihilate the most creative race on this planet, the white race. Within that race, the female is truly free. Take another example for this. When you attempt to be creative, you need room for doing so. You need free time, free space, and a mind free from thoughtful burden. Once that creativity sinks in, you need a border within which you can operate. You must limit yourself and express this creativity into something. If you let your creativity wander around too much, it will never turn into something real. It will always remain just and only an idea. Be as it may, as said, there are many ways to look at these realms of existence. Take the sperm, for example. It carries both X and Y, where the Y is smaller. Even though we associate the sperm as a male thing, the Y, which creates a boy, is smaller and carries less data. The sperm itself is more female than male. It is also chaotic, which again resembles the female aspect. When you get a random idea, is it the female or male aspect of yourself? Female? But if you have a weak male aspect to put this idea under control and will, it won't grow into anything. Then again, the will, male, sends out his force in terms of creative energies, female. That is why the Father is male, the Holy Spirit, female. whereas the child can turn out anything, male or female. I know it's all over the place, but the more we understand this, the more we will recognize how and why the Jew is destroying us. Why exactly he is turning our women into men and our men into women. Why he is promoting transgenderism. It clicks the more you realize that they are using hermetic knowledge, but ignoring natural laws and organic forms which we possess. Just because the brain could be regarded as a trans element, consisting of two hemispheres and having access to both the male and female aspect, doesn't mean that our body and all that comes with it is a trans element as well. So, we see there are many factors and reasons why the Jew is attempting to destroy the white race, especially the white female who is carrying the white racial form. And we know how much they hate us. And we know how much they want to eliminate us. One of the things we can hope for right now is that they themselves all turn into faggots and simply wipe themselves out with it. Which leads us to the final point of our discussion here. Why won't we learn from history? ? Why don't we see what the Jew has done from day one? How he enslaved our minds and our women with the inception of Christianity upon our lands. How he slowly killed the lady and is now attempting to kill the woman. How with the death of the woman, the mother is disappearing, which will mean that the child will never exist. That without the woman, there won't be a unity with the man. Therefore, no family. That without the family, there can't exist a home. Without a home, a settlement. Without settlements, a nation. Without the nation, a race or ethnicity. The source of all, God, may be an androgynous being that functions without borders and limits and is above space and time and all natural laws. But we are not. We are subject to these laws, and we cannot deny them as long as we exist within these organic bodies. As long as we are bound to genetics and this universe, the only sane, intelligent, reasonable, and wise thing to do is to understand and know ourselves and our relationship with this source and nature. Everything else leads to destruction and darkness. Be as it may, with all these things which we understand, how is it that we cannot apply them to our present time? Why is it that we can go into the past, look up history, and connect dots among Jews and their Shabboskoi? Why is it that we can look back and say, see, almost every single guy behind the German Revolution was a Jew? Almost all communists in Russia were Jews. All Bolsheviks were Jews. This and that president or important person were surrounded by Jews, therefore controlled and influenced. Why is it that we can do that for the past, but not for the present? What makes it so difficult? Why is it that we can now look at how Trump is surrounded by dozens of Jews? Literally everyone making his campaign is a Jew. That his family is basically filled with Jews now, and that he even has Jewish grandchildren, and that no one gives a fuck about such information. Why is that? keeping in mind this was written in June. Okay, going on. Imagine going now into the future, at least 50 years from now, and telling someone about the Jews. He'd look at Trump, his most recent history, and say, why the fuck did no one connect the dots here and realize what game was being played? The same for Putin, the same for Merkel, the same for almost every single fucking politician right now. And here we are, sitting in the dark, ignoring all the facts, and just wishing for something miraculous to happen, for goddamn Jesus to return and just machine gun all Jews or something. I'll tell you why. Because we are out of touch with reality. We are out of touch with this realm of existence. We are out of touch with our soul, ancestors, and spirit. We are out of touch with ourself. We lost our willpower. We lost all of our knowledge and wisdom. We lost the love for our race, the love between its male and female. Everything got replaced by Semitic ideologies and belief systems. We have been sitting on false hope for almost 2,000 years, believing instead of knowing, waiting instead of doing, trusting in a prophecy instead of making our own reality. Remember the source, the all, is above this realm. The God will never influence this realm. He's got nothing to influence it with. He is beyond time and space. He doesn't give a fuck about it. The only thing you can do is get in touch with his will through your own will and gain knowledge of certain kinds. We are afraid of dying, afraid of living, because we have been put under the Jesus spell of heaven and hell, of not being able to go to heaven if we do what might be wrong. There is no such thing, my friends. Death is simply the beginning of a new life. It can't go any other way. And if you wish to ascend into higher realms of existence, then you must grow your willpower. You must do what is right here. You must show this realm that you have no fear. We must break out of all Jewish indoctrinations, choices, suggestions, etc., and realize that within us lies the potential of a willpower so strong that it will shake the whole planet. This is the warrior spirit of the European, and it is about damn time it awakens. No lies anymore. No playing games. No playing by Jewish rules. No falling down on knees due to guilt. Stand up, both male and female, and protect what was given to you by the Creator. Protect that divinity. Protect your natural expression and protect nature with it, because no one else is going to give a fuck about it either. It isn't easy to be a white person. It is always easier to fall back into the Stone Age. It is easier to live without discipline, honor, courage, and love. This is why weak-willed people among us look for lifestyles and solutions among the third world. They think that Africans are doing something better than we are. They think that licking the butt of a cow, as in India, is spirituality. They think that ripping out hearts was a fine understanding of life in South America. They look for solutions at other races instead of realizing their own self, its potential, its excellency, its pride and heritage, its creativity, its achievements, its blood. It isn't easy to be white, to develop its highest potential, but It is a gift that has been passed on through generations, and that gift is now in your hands. Show us that you are worthy of carrying such a gift. Mohala awaits those that hate, shown the true meaning of being a creator. Thank you. All right. What I wrote down next is getting back to our neighborhoods, because I do see in my neighborhood that cashiers are being replaced at the local grocery store. Little by little, there's more and more computers that want us to do it all ourselves. So that brings me to Amazon's new robot run. Pull it up. Supermarket will phase out human employees. That was February 9 by Jake Anderson of the Antimedia. Imagine a 10,000 to 40,000 square foot two-story supermarket that employs only a few people. The glut of the workforce is robots. A small army of them toils away on the second floor, where they furiously bag items for the customers browsing below. According to a report by the New York Post, this is the prototype of a new near future Amazon supermarket, a colossal version of the new Amazon Go convenience store that uses no cashiers or checkouts. And it's another example of how automation's already rapid encroachment on the human job market has gone into overdrive. Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos wants his automated grocery store to feature a ground level where shoppers can touch, physically select items, typical food products that people like to touch, beer, fruit, etc. This floor may also feature a pharmacy, which would be a new but financially promising sector for the company, and human greeters, double as shoplifter deterrents. Some of these stores, Bezos believes, will be able to operate with as few as 3 human employees and a maximum of 10. They will function mostly as menial clerks, signing people up to Amazon Fresh, restocking shelves, managing the drive-through, and even assisting the robots. One almost gets the impression the store could go completely sans human employees if Amazon didn't mind the stigma. Perhaps that's where we're headed, and sooner rather than ever. The monetary advantage is clear. With a meager payroll and optimized real estate, Amazon model stands to generate an operating profit margin of 20%. According to the Food Marketing Institute, the industry average is only 1.7%. If these numbers hold, you can say goodbye to the human grocery clerk. This isn't the first attempt at an automated grocery store. In 2015, the group Eater Greater Des Moines began creating an automated store kiosk. Even as far back as 1937, the completely automated store, Kidozu, as Kidazo, launched in 3 locations before failing due to technical difficulties. With human cashiers already rapidly losing their jobs to automated kiosks in many grocery stores, it seems there has been a steady shift away from human labor in grocery stores. The Amazon robot supermarket model will expedite that shift by replacing most of the clerks with robots. Amazon deferring to technology over people should come as no surprise to those who have followed the company closely. In 2012, Amazon dropped $775 million, acquiring the company Kiva for the purposes of robotic warehouse automation. And of course, there's the legendary delivery by drone plan featured in a Super Bowl ad over the weekend that hovers inexorably in our near future. Additional reports suggest the Amazon supermarkets may only be available to those with Amazon Prime membership. A source says this restriction may help reduce theft because in the view of Amazon, people who can afford Prime memberships aren't likely to shoplift. So thank you. Now we need to move on to another very recent article, February 11. Assad rejects Trump safe zone plan. Says Syria will be safe when the West, GCC, stop supporting terrorists. By Brandon Turberville of Activist Post. I read, after rightly rejecting the new draft constitution for Syria submitted by Russia, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad is wisely rejecting the Trump administration concept of the implementation of safe zones inside Syria. In the first interview with Western media since the election of Donald Trump, Assad decried the plan as a bad idea that would have no real ability to protect civilians or end the Syrian crisis. When asked by the interviewer about Trump's statement that he would absolutely create safe zones in Syria for the Syrian people, Assad responded by saying, quote, but actually, it won't protect civilians. It won't. Safe zones for the Syrians could only happen when you have stability and security, where you don't have terrorists, where you don't have the flow and support of those terrorists by the neighboring countries or by Western countries. This is where you can have a natural safe zone, which is our country. They don't need safe zones at all. It's not a realistic idea at all. End quote. When the interviewer pressed Assad on the fact that so many Syrians were displaced, and thus, how can you oppose safe zones? Assad pointed directly at the root of the problem. He stated, quote, the first thing you have to ask, why were they displaced? If you don't answer that question, you cannot answer the rest. They were displaced for two reasons. First of all, the terrorist acts and the support from the outside. Second, the U.S. embargo on Syria. Many people didn't only leave Syria because of the security issues. As you can see, Damascus is safe today. It's nearly normal life. Not completely. But they don't find a way for life in Syria, so they have to travel abroad in order to find their living. So, if you lift the embargo, and if you stop supporting the terrorists, I'm talking about everyone who supported terrorists, including the United States during Obama's administration, if you stop all these acts, most of those people will go back to their country. End of quote. Indeed, in this short interview clip, Assad echoed the same sentiment and solutions that I and many other Syrian researchers and analysts have been saying from the beginning of the crisis. If America wants to stop terrorism in Syria, it need only stop funding it, supporting it, and directing it. It's that simple. The U.S. could also call on its allies, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, U.K., France, Qatar, and Israel to do the same. It could work with Russia to eliminate the remnants of terrorist forces. And it could provide information and coordinates to both Syria and Russia on the whereabouts of terrorists and terrorist forces. We should call on the Trump administration to immediately end any and all support for armed groups in Syria, to press Americans' allies to stop supporting terrorists, immediately begin reapproachment with Russia and Syria, and look toward the future of investment in rebuilding Syria as a country, as well as immediately ending the sanctions currently in place among the Syrian people. Thank you. We all here at Renegade agree on that, right? Now I'm going to go on to a Valentine's Day posting by Renegade. Red Russian, aka Jewish Mafia, by Thomas Mueller of the New Nationalist. The Red Russian Mafia is political correctness for what is more accurately the Jewish Israeli Mafia. That came out of Russia after the fall of the Soviet Union. At least the mafia kingpins, Semyon Mogilevich, Maria Elson, Marat Balagola, Vangelis Ivanko, Vladimir Ginsburg, and Ludwig von Ferg are Jewish. The seminal book on this topic was part of my awakening, and it's called Red Mafia by Robert Friedman. The courageous author, who was Jewish, paid for his work with his life. R.I.P. 1951 to 2002. Starting in the 1970s and accelerating after the fall of the Soviet Union, thousands of these Russian thugs somehow were let into America with the greatest of ease. The understaffed and ill-equipped Immigration Service, Robert Friedman reveals, seemed helpless to stop them. Thousands of former Soviet athletes and special forces veterans at the Afghanistan wars, including many retired KGB agents, swarmed into America. It is estimated that 500,000 to 750,000 Russian Jews came in. The FBI at the time called them far more lethal and dangerous than Italian mafia ever were. Quote, "The Russians didn't come here to enjoy the American dream," New York State tax agent Roger Berger said glumly, in quotes Russians. "They came here to steal it." Many, in quotes Russian, criminals ended up at Brighton Beach, Brooklyn. They were at once put on retainers of $20,000 a month. No jobs as janitors or road sweepers for them. Like ducks to water, they took to sex trafficking, prostitution, pornography, drug running, loan sharking, stock market scams, arson, burglary, bank and jewelry frauds, counterfeiting, vote rigging, arms sales, extortion, and murder. At this stage, the Red Mafia is second generation, and as such, are more Americanized. Many are dual Israeli citizens. It has morphed into what I call, at least in part, the crime syndicate. Red Mafia was folded into this. They formed powerful associations with other non-Jewish crime and intelligence-connected families, such as the Bushes and Clintons. They can lurk under slimy rocks because the Zog media is either involved or looks the other way as well. Besides the standard criminality, I believe they are now also involved in more legitimate military-industrial complex and surveillance neocon contracts. They play a key role in various hoaxes and fundraising scams off of all these hoaxes. So I now want to play and it goes really fast, so I might have to read really fast to do that or stop the music. The Jewish Mafia and Their USA Bankers by Brother Nathaniel Kapner, copyright 2008. Sources: The Jewish Laundry of Drug Money, Israel Shahak. Red Mafia: How the Russian Mob Has Invaded America, by Friedman. See, I'm trying to catch it. I'm so sorry. It's hard to read sometimes. Okay. Free Soviet Jews was the slogan. I think I'll just go ahead and start playing it. Plastered all over America by the Jews from 1970 to the year 2000. The late Senator Henry Jackson, who was brought by the Jews, spearheaded in his 1974 Jackson, gonna make this large and thank you. I love the music, it's so fitting of this Jewish Russian mafia we have. Exposing them will get you killed. Red Mafia, How the Russian Mob Has Invaded America. This is top. Uncovering the Russian Jewish Mafia Will Get You Killed. I'm gonna read fast. The major figure in uncovering the Russian Jewish Mafia in America was a journalist named Robert I. Freeman, who died in 2002 at the age of 51 from a so-called tropical disease. In his book, Red Mafia, How the Russian Mob Has Invaded America, Freeman interviewed major underground men. After Freeman's book was published, Russian Jewish Mafia leaders put a bounty on his head for $100,000. The Russian Jewish Mafia knows that it can murder with impunity given their working relationship with European and American intelligence agencies. Even the FBI in America keeps no files on the activities of the Russian Jewish Mafia. In fact, the FBI, according to Freeman, loathed to go after Jewish Mafia figures because of intense pressure and money to key officials from the Anti-Defamation, ADL, and all those Jewish lobbying groups. Starting with Mara Balugala, born in 1943 in Odessa, Ukraine, amassing a large fortune in the Soviet black market, Balugala, at the age of 37, moved from Odessa to New York City under the Jackson-Vanik Amendment. Balugala opened up a restaurant in the Brighton Beach, Brooklyn area, named it the Odessa. Soon, Mara Balugala had hundreds of Russian Jewish employees who had nothing to do with his restaurant business. The restaurant became the headquarters for jewelry fencing, Medicare fraud, prostitution, heroin imports from poppy, etc., etc. Next, Simeon Mogilevich. Born in 1946 in Kyiv, Ukraine, in the early 1970s, he became part of the Lubyanskaya crime group in Moscow. Just prior to this, Mogilevich had built a lucrative prostitution ring in Israel and in Eastern Europe. Simeon Mogilevich and the Moscow criminal organization began in trading art and antiques stolen from churches and museums in Eastern Europe. On it goes on. Mogilevich began trading in military equipment manufactured in Hungary. Soon, Mogilevich began trading in uranium and nuclear arsenals. NATO has said that he is a threat to the stability of Europe. Mogilevich also masterminded the largest money laundering scheme in U.S. history, washing $7 billion through the Bank of New York, one of the owners of the Federal Reserve System. His money laundering scheme prompted an investigation by U.S. Congress that led to a dead end. Why a dead end? Well, because of Jewish influence, of course. Congress investigates the Russian Jewish Mafia. On September 1, 1999, Congressman James A. Lee's chairman, Committee on Banking and Financial Services, led a full-scale investigation of Russian Jewish Mafia money laundering that led to a dead end. Hearing on Russian money laundering. The committee meets for its hearing on the depths of crime and corruption in Russia, Russian use of offshore financial institutions, and the twining of those with our banks. We invited several witnesses, but they have declined to appear before the committee, including, I'm going to stop it, because I'm going to just read it. There's a lot to read here, and it goes fast, including Natasha Gagosian, Jew, former head of the Eastern European Division, Bank of New York. Another one they called to appear before the Congressional Committee was Bruce Rappaport, Jew, chairman and CEO of Bank of New York, Inter-Maritime. Mikhail Khodorkovsky, Jew, Russian oil industry executive. We will begin with an examination of recent allegations that corrupt Russian Jews, groups, and individuals have infiltrated Western financial institutions. The banks must cooperate with our efforts and be our first line of defense against criminal enterprises seeking to launder their illicit proceeds by entering them into the legitimate financial system. The U.S. must ensure that our financial institutions do not contribute to or facilitate corruption abroad. Let the music play for a second. Make it louder. The Russian Jewish Mafia works within community. I'm going to stop and read. The Russian Jewish Mafia operates within the Jewish community. Gentiles must understand that Jews have a common interest between themselves for their self-survival, and it is upon money that the Jews depend. Thus, the Russian Jewish Mafia operates with the support of hundreds of Jewish lobby groups that receive millions, millions of dollars from the Russian Jewish Mafia. And what can American Christians do about the Russian Jewish Mafia and their bankers? It begins with the knowledge that not only are the Jews pulling their propagandizing fleece over American eyes, but fleecing American pocketbooks as well. I'm going to play the music for a while. Go on, finish. Thank you. ACLU, Jews are Antichrist. So Brother Nathaniel Stein says. So thank you. He's such a trustworthy. All right. I wanted now to talk a little bit more about what I've been talking about. Every Wednesday in February so far, that is the strange naming of February. And I'm done. As like I said before, I was going to do was talk about what it says in Wikipedia. Give me a second, and I'll come up. All right. Thank you. Just going to jump right on to the part where it is the history of the word. The Roman month Februarius was named after the Latin term Februum, which means purification. It's a little bit large. Thank you. Via the purification ritual, Februa, held on January 15, that's today, full moon in the old lunar Roman calendar. I will go on to the part where January and February were added by Numa Pompilius to the Roman calendar about 713 BC. February remained the last month of the calendar year until the time of the Decemvirs, That was 450 BC. Now I'm going to go on to February observances in ancient Rome. Let's see. Include Ambericum, and it goes on about that. Getting to the historical names. Historical names for February include the old English terms, which we talked about last week, Somonus, Mudmus, and Kale Monus, named for cabbage, as well, and here's some new information, as Charlemagne's designation, Hornung. In Finnish, the month is called Hamkul, meaning month of the pearl. When snow melts on tree branches, it forms droplets. And as these freeze again, they are like pearls of ice. In Polish and Ukrainian, respectively, the month is called Luty, or Numio, meaning the month of ice or hard frost. In Macedonia, the month is Sheko, meaning month of cutting wood. In Czech, it is called Hunor, meaning month of submerging of river ice. Okay. All right, going on with that. In Slovene, February is traditionally called Živinkan, relating to icicles or Candlemas. This name originates from Sikan, written as Svinkan in the New Chameleon Almanac from 1775 and changed to its final form by Frank Natalko in his New Almanac from 1824. The name was also spelled Sikan, meaning the month of cutting down of trees. In 1848, a proposal was put forward by the Slovene Society to call this month something else, which means ice melting, but it did not stick. The idea was proposed by a priest. Another name of February in Slovene was Vesna, after the mythological character Vesna. Thank you. So that's all about February. I had seen it where in 1848, even in America, there was a meeting to think about changing the name from February, but they didn't do it, as we know very well. I want to say that I was just really thrilled to see that put up was the various Carolyn Jaeger and Hattie Scott on Henry Ford's International Jew. And I'll read what note was put in by Renegade, posted on February 12th. This is almost a full day's worth of listening for you, if you are so interested. And believe me, I am. But just keep them when you can listen to them whenever you feel like it. These broadcasts were on the White Network, which is now defunct. So it seemed like a good idea to curate them here. This series deals with Henry Ford's controversial writings on international jewelry, which were published in the Dearborn Independent and distributed in all new Fords. And I don't know why the white nationalist that Carolyn had disappeared. I think it's because, sadly, people have trouble getting along with each other. But Renegade is going on strong, and it's always going to be here for us to look at. Give me one more second. I'm going to pull up some other articles from the Renegade Tribune that have just been posted. Religious attitudes of the Indo-Europeans was also a Valentine's gift to us, and I really appreciate it. This reading is an excerpt from Chapter 1 of Religious Attitudes of the Indo-Europeans by famous Third Reich scholar Hans F.K. Gunther. And yes, I know I keep talking about Valentine's Day because I do love it. It came and went so fast yesterday. Okay, quote, freedom is where you can live as pleases a brave heart, where you can live according to the customs and laws of your fathers, where you are made happy by that which made your most distant ancestors happy. So says E.M. Arndt, Catechism for the Teutonic Soldier and Warrior, 1813. In this work, I want to advance some reflections on the religiosity of the Indo-European. That is to say, the Indo-European speaking peoples originating from a common Bronze Age nucleus who have always exerted a significant influence on the government and spirit of predominantly Nordic races, just as by comparing the structure of the Indian, Persian, Circassian, Armenian, Slavic, and Baltic languages, and of the Greek, Italian, Celtic, and Teutonic dialects, we can reach a conclusion as to a common or primal Indo-European language approximating to the latter part of the early Stone Age. In the same way, an examination of the laws and legal customs of the different peoples of Indo-European language reveals a primal Indo-European feeling for law. Similarly, from a comparison of the religious forms of these peoples, we can identify a particular religious attitude emanating from the Indo-European nature, a distinctive behavior of Indo-European men and women towards the divine powers. So it is that certain common religious attitudes, which originally were peculiar to all peoples of Indo-European language, reveal the identity of an Indo-European religiosity. But since, in fact, all Indo-European nations represented different types molded on the spiritual pattern of the Nordic race, the origin of these common religious attitudes may be identified in the religiosity which is characteristically Nordic, emanating from the spiritual nature of the Nordic race.
We go all our ways till the sleeper awakens, and we do the best we can. Till our destiny is a calling, and we rise like lions, rising free. And we descend like angels from beyond infinity. Yeah, yeah. Ooh, yeah, yeah.
Damn it! YouTube, show it me again!
After getting censored relentlessly on YouTube, with video after video and channel after channel getting taken down, we have decided to try a different approach.
We now have RenegadeVids.com, which features all the documentaries, parodies, compilations, sketches, and video discussions that are simply too accurate for the kosher censors.
There are now many hours worth of hard-hitting videos waiting for you to watch and share, so get on over to RenegadeVids.com.
Keep on shining on, oh, black water, keep on rolling.
Miss
Mississippi moon, won't you keep on shining on me?
Oh, Blackwater, keep on rolling.
Mississippi moon, won't you keep on shining on me?